You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is David Cohn. The Michael K. Show starts now. Don't screw it up, boys.
Thank you, Coney, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Thursday, April 7th, 2022. It's opening day around baseball, opening day for the New York Mets. Yankees wisely rained out their opening day today yesterday, so it's going to be tomorrow. So we're all set. We're locked and loaded. We're ready to roll. Kay, LeGreco, Rosenberg, we're apart, but we're together for the next 3.5 hours. The other 20 and a half, that is your responsibility. Gentlemen, ladies out there listening, how you all doing?
Good. I'm sitting here watching Brewers Cubs just because I can.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just do things because you can. And I can. And I will.
Ooh, Tiger just hit it close on 10.
Yeah, that was my feeling.
Peter has come around to my way of thinking, and a lot of people have. Because Peter tweeted out a photo of him sitting there in the nude watching Tiger. Was it everything that I've advertised it to be?
You know, listen, it was... It was just a picture for Twitter, Michael. I wouldn't actually watch in the nude because I'm not a psychopath.
And judging by the picture, are you really actually nude? You can live in the wild.
You're referring to my hairy legs.
Yes.
Why do people obsess about that, Peter? You're just hirsute. What's the big deal?
I've never heard the word hirsute until an hour ago, but or 15 minutes ago, but...
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone needs to comment on me being hairy. It's like... I just want to give everyone out there the biggest "how's it working out for me" of all time.
So you're really you're Harry from Inglewood.
That's right, Harry and the Hendersons, Teen Wolf, Chewbacca,
right?
George the Animal Steel,
yeah, Turnbuckle.
Who am I forgetting?
My old back,
Jabroni Pumpleduck.
Oh, Jabroni Pumpleduck. He was, it's like a werewolf.
So how does Tiger look so far?
Tiger looks pretty damn good so far. I just missed whatever just happened. I'm hearing a cheer right now. He has been pretty straight all day long. He has not been uber aggressive. I wouldn't say he's been like in the zone, you know, to the point where you're like, oh, my God, could he win this whole thing? But you certainly think he could be in this. He was one under until the eighth. He bogeyed the par five eighth and then had got a birdie on another par five a couple holes back and is back at one under. And he's been damn good, guys. He does not look like a different guy. Honestly, if anything, he maybe looks a little bit more reserved and a little bit more risk averse, which, frankly, given his age, is not a bad thing for his game.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think sometimes we lose sight because of, you know, the fairy tale that is Tiger Woods. They were talking about amputating this man's leg. That's how badly injured he was. And 13 months later, he's walking a very unforgiving course in terms of hills and undulating, you know, greens and stuff like that. It takes a lot out of the leg. I've never understood that because I'm not a golf aficionado. What's the big deal about letting him use a cart? What's I don't get it.
Really? You don't get it?
Why? Does it make it? Oh, they're more of an athlete if they walk the course? Why? The whole thing is about hitting the ball.
No, but part of it is the stamina of being able to walk the course.
Why? Who made that? Who made that to be a thing?
I don't know, hitting the ball,
getting in the hole.
But no, part of it is the stamina that one needs to be able to be through that amount of time. That's, you know, that's part of it, right?
I hear where Michael's coming from. I get it, the tradition of it, But, I mean, is that really the skill? I mean, it's nice that you can walk, but which golfers are incapable of walking? Like, everyone can do it, but does it?
Well, because obviously you get to a point as you get older, is it possible that now you get to the back nine, you're not as strong as you were in the front nine?
But wait a minute. We have baseball players that were able to play another 8 years because of the DH. So right, this, in effect, would be a DH.
Not
because
even.
The whole key about golf is to get the ball in the hole, fewer putts than the other guy.
But that's the key to you.
No, that's the key to golf. I mean, why don't you have them do like, do bench presses in the middle of the fairway too? I mean, is it an Ironman thing or is it striking the ball as close to the pin as you could?
Don, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Can you explain how I just got a verified alert on my Twitter that the tweet of me watching Tiger nude was liked by the band Foreigner?
Oh,
please
my.
Explain. Anyone?
Holy crap.
So random.
And it's very random. But, you know, Foreigner's a great band.
No, but apparently they're into me watching Tiger nude. Who knew?
Well, because they're semi-local. One of the guys is from New York. They may follow me, too. Matter of fact, we talked about it. Double Vision, the song Double Vision.
Song they saw Double his legs. Vision. They know what love is.
Right. The song Double Vision came from them watching a Ranger game, and John Davidson got hit in the face with a man. And the announcer, probably Jim Gordon at the time, said, I think he's experiencing double vision. They came up with the song. So there is ties to New York sports. They probably love the show. Hi, Foreigner. Thanks for watching and for listening. You've chosen the hand-eye coordination and the skill of hitting a ball with a crooked stick into a hole. What also is part of it is walking the course. And you said these undulating hills, well, that's part of it. And because he's coming back from a major injury and because he hasn't played competitively at this height in 17 months, that could affect him later on. Where if you've got a golf course, you're kind of evening it out. Heck, a guy might be able to play at least 70. But that's part of what why not have, older players? You want to keep them around longer? Have a pinch runner for him at home plate.
Peter, let me let you know a little secret here, okay? Because Don will argue this till the cows come home.
Oh, here we go.
If Tiger Woods says tomorrow to the heads of the PGA, listen, I can't walk the course anymore. I could play, but I'm going to need a cart. You know what? They'll change the rule.
No, they wouldn't.
They'll change the rule.
No, they would.
Yes, they will.
No, they wouldn't.
He's golf.
But here's the thing. It's so ridiculous, Tiger would never even think to ask.
No,
it's ridiculous
he wouldn't ask.
What you're asking.
They would just do it.
But they wouldn't do it. I don't think, honestly, as much as he is golf, they wouldn't do it. Because that would bastardize the whole thing. I understand it's not a sport in its traditional sense of what you see with the four major sports or whatever, but it's a sport that where it does require the ability, the stamina of walking that course. And why would you make it easier for them?
Why did they have the DH so that older players could play?
All right, well, but this is apples and oranges.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
There's parallels there.
So you're saying the DH was only instituted in the American League to keep careers longer. No, it was instituted because nobody wanted to see lousy pitchers hit.
Oh, I don't think – do the cameras follow them walking the golf course most of the time? No, they follow them shooting at the cup. That's golf.
But it's
listen, I know what you're saying. That's part of the romanticism of golf that they walk the course. How come in every single golf course in the world they use golf carts?
Because they're not playing it on a competitive level like a professional's.
But I don't think that anybody would freak out if they let professional golfers
I do think some would.
Oh, some would. I mean, you get the people who call up and complain about the auxiliary scoreboard.
But,
that
like,
crowd.
Like,
I hope they lose.
Like you have to be in physical condition to be in a NASCAR, because if you're not, then and you start to kind of lose the physical ability to be, for 500 laps, that you won't be as good in the last 100 as you were in the first 100. So I still like the idea that these guys are in some way, shape, or form athletes, and the better condition will have a chance to be better at it, because part of it is walking the course. Why should they balance everything out for everybody? And I would think Tiger would never do it. If they offered him one, he wouldn't do it. Because part of the competition is seeing if he can walk that course. I'm very surprised that you're taking this tact. I really am.
Well, I guess you can qualify for an exemption, Don. And Anthony sent me this. So he was asked about the possibility of using a golf cart for the Masters, and he said, no, absolutely not. Not for a PGA Tour event, no. That's just who I am. That's not how I've always been, and if I can't play at that level, I can't play at that level.
That's it. Don't you respect that?
Yeah, there's a respect level to it, but I don't look at walking as a big part of golf. Again, but, this is coming from someone who's not a golfer.
I'm not a golfer. But I do appreciate the aspect of is that walking that course is part of it. It's not just the hand-eye coordination and the drive and the tapping in for birdie. It's part of, hey, this is a long course. It's a long day. And it's different than a bunch of guys that sit there on the ninth hole and have a hot dog and a couple of beers and they're smoking cigars while they're putting. That's a completely different animal. But when you're going at this level, then I don't think you give them the break of a cart.
Well, according to the rules that I'm reading here, they aren't prohibited, but they aren't encouraged by any means. In fact, for those who are able, walking the course is a requirement. Able. And according to For the Win, it was a hard requirement until 2001. Casey Martin, remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Took a case to the Supreme Court when he sued the PGA for denying him the ability to use a golf cart. Martin won the lawsuit after 4 years, forcing the PGA to grant a golf cart for players suffering from specific circumstances. So I guess Tiger could push it, but he said he wasn't going.
Right. Now, again, I guess the analogy would be because sometimes this happens, like when you play softball, right, or you're playing any kind of recreational sport, and somebody's like, oh, my knees are really bothering me. I want to play, so I'm going to have somebody pinch run for me, meaning somebody's going to stand at home play. When I make contact, they're going to run the first for me. You see that? We do it. Whenever Dave Rothenberg plays in the Mark Sasso softball, he has his son do it because Dave can't be bothered.
Wait. So what's the need? Why does he?
He just doesn't want to run.
But let me throw this at you, Don. And, Peter, you can say this as well. I don't see Tiger or any of the other guys carrying their bags.
No, they don't carry their bags.
Well, okay. Isn't that part of, like, stamina?
Because I just think it's part of the sport that you have a caddy. Caddy also does other things, too. He's kind of like having a coach there. But a golf cart, to me, seems excessive. So what if there is a ball player that could still hit the ball 500 feet, but his knees are really bad and he just can't run anymore? Should baseball then institute a pinch runner at home plate?
Not at home plate, but if you get the first base, you could have a pinch. They was talking about having a designated pinch runner. Herb Washington, essentially, with the A's, back when Charlie Finley owned the team, was a designated pinch runner, but it wasn't a real rule, but he came in and pinch ran.
I mean, you could pinch run, but then that guy's out of the game.
Right. So, but I'm sure that, you know, rules are made. There were no three-point shots in the NBA. There were three-point shots now, so rules could be changed.
Well, but
I didn't think we'd go off on this.
No, but I just think that part, correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, part of whether Tiger would be able to compete is would he be able to walk that course?
Right.
And so that's part of it. Now, if you're just going to have a golf cart, now you're taking a major obstacle away from Tiger Woods. That would kind of diminish the comeback then, wouldn't it? Because he said he did not. He said he never didn't worry about the golf aspect of it because he knows he can swing. He knows he can putt. He can do all that. Would he be able to walk the course? That's part of the drama of this whole weekend.
Okay, can we go on to baseball now?
I don't know. I was having
sure.
fun.
No, okay. No, fun, but not for everybody. Everybody's
I love
not
baseball.
Having fun about the golf cart talk. I didn't think it was going to go for 30 minutes, so I apologize.
I'm sorry.
I even brought it up. Time for Diamond Notes on the Michael K. Show, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. So the Mets start tonight. It is going to be Tyler McGill, who is going to get the start because of circumstances. This was Jacob DeGrom's start. Obviously, he can't make it. He probably won't see him for 2 months. Max Scherzer is supposed to go tomorrow on a game that will not be seen by everybody in the New York metropolitan area unless they have Apple TV. Again, that's a discussion we're not going to get into again, but it's the Mets starting their season. So we all worried about the lockout. The lockout was terrible. It started on December 2nd. Most people thought there was going to be a month of baseball that was going to be canceled or delayed. And you know what? It turned out to be a week, and those games are going to be made up. So it all starts today, and we've got baseball today in Wrigley Field. So the season has started. Yankees start tomorrow against the Red Sox. It's Nathan Eovaldi for the Red Sox, Gerrit Cole for the New York Yankees, and here we go. We've been waiting for it, and here we go. And there's nothing like the two words of opening day. It means the same as tomorrow's game, means the same as the game on Sunday. They're all one of 162, but there's certain romanticism to opening day. Yeah. Everything is new. Everything is bright and real again. Everybody has hope. Everybody has dreams. Everybody thinks that they could finish first. So that's the beauty of tonight when the Mets have the first pitch against them at 7 o'clock, and it's going to be on SNY, and I'm pumped up.
Yeah, I do think that some of the pageantry of opening day, it isn't quite the same anymore. It's not the Yankees' fault that the game got rained out, but, Michael, there was only 9 games scheduled today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want everybody to play. You know, and I can't expect everybody to play during the day. Some will play at night, but I want a full slate of games. Is that so you have opening day today, you have opening day tomorrow. So doesn't it take some of the pageantry away from it? Again, Yankees, what are you going to do? You got it rained out. Twins, game got rained out. But to have not everybody play, to me, takes some of the fun away from it. But it's still
pretty
cool. It doesn't
feel exactly like opening day.
Well, remember, we are under different circumstances because I believe that March 31st, everybody was scheduled to play. So the week was taken off, so some teams weren't scheduled on this Thursday, and that's why there were only 9 games and 10 games if the Yankees didn't get rained out. So, I mean, the intent was let's have this baseball bacchanal on March 31st, but unfortunately because of the labor disagreement, that's what cost us that day. So, but you could also look at it this way, Don. You've got the 9 games today, and that means you're going to have 11 games – well, that means you'll have 6 games tomorrow that you didn't have today, so you spread out opening day over 2 days, and you look at it that way. Look at it in a positive way.
Yeah, and I'm excited because, listen, there's so much to get excited about with this Mets team. Now we're going to have to wait for DeGrom for a while. We're going to have to wait till tomorrow for Scherzer. You know, it's not ideal to have an opener on the opener, but there's still a lot to get excited about. This team should be able to score some runs. Getting out of the gate is always going to be very, very important, especially trying to compete with the Phillies and especially the Braves, who I still think are the best team in this division, but until proven otherwise, you know, Mets still have a shot here, and getting off to a good start is important for everybody, especially when the expectations are so high for this team. So I'm pumped for tonight. I got Rangers Penguins on one TV. I'll have Mets Nationals on another TV. It's going to be fun.
It should be good. I think the Mets are going to get a big number tonight. Obviously they should. There's a lot of hope around this team, and let's talk about some of that hope. Is it misplaced? Is it misguided? Or is it real? I think the Mets probably would be thought of ahead of the Braves, and people could argue with me about that. Even Don and Peter might. If they had DeGrom healthy, if they had DeGrom and Scherzer at the top of that rotation to go with Bassett, that's a good top three. And 4 and 5 isn't bad either. Now they're compromised. Without DeGrom for 2 months, I mean, that's missing about 8 or 9 starts. I think that's significant. It also drains the bullpen a little bit as well. So when you look at me and you say, well, what's some of the worries about the Mets? I like their lineup. Their bullpen is okay. It's not a strength, but it's okay. And the bottom line is that they're a little short rotation-wise. I mean, when you have to start Tyler McGill today, now I understand why you're starting him. You didn't want to displace the other starters and keep them. You know, you had this carefully structured plan for the first month of the season. And if you move Carrasco or Walker to the game one start, all of a sudden all that goes into the toilet. So they just start McGill tonight. But I think that drops them a notch below the Braves. I really do. And you might disagree with me, but I like what they've done. I like the addition of Escobar. I like the addition of Canna, who's a really smart, intuitive player. I love why is the name escaping me? The right fielder that they got from the A's, the free agent.
Marte?
No, not Canna. Wow, I'm really losing my mind.
You said the right fielder is Starling Marte.
Yeah, Starling Marte. That I think that's a big pickup, too. He's going to have like 40, I think, stolen bases this year. You've got the addition of a tremendous manager who I think will make a big difference. So I think Mets fans should feel good today. I really do.
Well, you know, the thing that – because when you first started talking about DeGrom, you start thinking about all the runs they didn't score for him, like in his career, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it didn't necessarily result in wins with DeGrom. There were so many no decisions or losses by the bullpen. But now I was excited this year because I think they're going to hit, Michael. I think they're going to be a better offensive team, and I was excited for a full year of DeGrom getting some run support. But still, you know, I think even a day like today where you're going to have to piece together 4 or 5 pitchers at least to be able to get through, you look at this order. I think you got to believe that Lindor is going to be better than he was last year. At least you hope, right?
And he had a great spring training. Although he had a great spring training last year, too.
Yeah, and, you know, you've got, as you said, the two new additions. I think people are excited about them, with Escobar being the third. And, you know, Pete Alonso. So I think they're going to score some runs here. Yeah, there's some, you know, question marks about the bullpen, but we'll see. It always seems to go from year to year, one bad year, one good year. But the idea is that Scherzer should be able to give you innings, Bassett should be able to give you some innings, and maybe not have to rely on the bullpen quite as much. I agree with you that DeGrom being gone stinks, but I'm not necessarily sure it's a death knell either, because I do think they'll hit. And you hope that DeGrom is a nice addition come June, to where it's going to feel like you traded for a Cy Young Award winner.
If he comes back, I mean, do you really feel comfortable with that?
Well, I mean, you have to. Well, you go by the Waka injury in 2014. What was it, Peter? They said, I think he left in early mid-June, came back in early September.
Yeah, it was like 4 months.
Yeah, and then Brandon McCarthy did. No, Waka was about 2.5 months. Same thing with Brandon McCarthy.
June, July, August, September. 3 months at least.
Was mid-June to early September. So
all right, so right around 3 months, yeah.
Yeah.
See, but here's what worries me, Don. I think that the stress fracture of the scapula is not going to be an issue because that heals with time. But there's never a resolution for what happened last year.
All right, but he did get through 15 starts last year, right?
Until then, and he hasn't pitched since then.
No, understood. But and he said the scapula is a different thing. So if it just became he pitched too much or too hard or whatever, maybe this rest will be a good thing, and now he'll have those, you know, maybe 15, 20 starts for the rest of the regular season. Say if he comes back, you know, even in late June, that you might have a full-strength DeGrom the rest of the way instead of what the Mets were expecting, maybe DeGrom pitching the first couple of months of the season, then going down, and now you don't have him for the stretch run. Listen, I'm obviously pie in the sky, just hoping that everything works out here, but if this was – what Buster Olney was telling us when you were away, that this was something the Mets expected. Well, then isn't it better for it to happen now than to happen in the middle of a pennant race and you know he's not coming back? Because if this was diagnosed and sniffed out sometime in like late July, then we're talking about not having him for the stretch run or the postseason. Now I guess there's a hope that you might be able to get first half DeGrom last year in the second half this year. And as long as you keep your head above water while he's out, boy, that could be a major acquisition for them.
And Bear's excited about the Mets opening day. You can hear him in the background.
Yeah, ooh, Tiger just did it close on 10.
Yeah, you know, he's watching Tiger right now.
Here's the deal, though, Don. The Mets were expecting this, according to Buster. They weren't expecting this. They expected something to happen with his arm and knock him out for a while. They didn't expect a stress fracture of the scapula. So it's something that happened. So unless they were just expecting a quote-unquote injury, well, they got that, but I think they were worried more about the shoulder that sidelined him for the last 2.5 months last year.
But does this come from the way he pitched? You know, having an injury, you know what it is with the mechanics of pitchers. You know, overcompensating for an elbow can create a shoulder and vice versa, and if your back's bad. Like, there's a lot of things that go into it. But either way, they got Scherzer. Whatever the anticipation was for DeGrom, they got Scherzer to make sure they had an ace if DeGrom went down. And as long as this hamstring for Scherzer is okay, well, then they still have an ace and a really good pitcher. And Bassett's a really good pitcher, too. And Walker was great, you know, last year for them. And then we'll see what Carrasco can be. And so this still is a pretty good rotation that losing DeGrom – there's not too many teams that can lose an ace like this and replace him with a future Hall of Famer, Max Scherzer, who is still an outstanding pitcher.
CeCe Sabathia was on Barton Hahn today, and he talked to the guys about DeGrom's injury. Here's CeCe.
Man, it's concerning. I mean, obviously, he's the best pitcher in the league, and it's not even close to me. So, you know, anytime you miss that guy, it's going to hurt your team. You know, even with having Max there, I think, you know, that puts so much more pressure on Max at his, you know, advanced age to try to go out and hold the fort until Jake can get back. But, you know, I think that's just going to put more stress on Max. So we'll just have to wait and see how it shakes out. Hopefully, Taijuan Walker can step up and pitch some big innings for him until DeGrom can get back. But that's a huge, huge blow, especially in that division with the, you know, the way the Phillies lineup is looking. Yeah. Obviously, the Braves won the World Series last year, and the Marlins are a lot better. So, you know, you need that pitching. I mean, that Phillies lineup is nasty. So we'll just have to wait and see how it shakes out. But I just think it puts more pressure on Max to go out and try to be perfect at an age where, you know, it's going to put a lot of stress on his arm and his body.
Well, there you have it. That's from CC Sabathia. He had some other things to say on Barton Hahn, which we'll address a little bit later on. Now we talk to you, 1-800-919-3776. And those are Diamond Notes brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Picker Design, the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget at any of their six area locations. It's Kay LeGreco, Rosenberg, and you. It's opening day in baseball. Tigers play in golf. The Knicks blew another big lead against the Nets. So all is just as we thought it would be in the world right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tiger Woods.
Oh, yeah.
Finishes first round with a 1-under-71, putting him for now 3 shots off the lead. The bionic
how do you like
golfer.
That?
It's amazing. Yeah,
Cameron Smith double bogeys 18. So Tiger, who already would have felt really solid considering he really wasn't hitting fairways all day long, would feel great about being 1-under. But that 1-under gets that much sexier, guys, when your leader drops 2 strokes on the last hole.
Very sexy, don't you think? Very sexy.
Right now, you know, I think Andrew's going to lose, barring something unforeseen tomorrow. He's making a cut.
I mean, I'm feeling good about my prediction.
What did you have it again?
1-under.
Ooh.
Feeling good. I could see him staying right around here the whole tournament. I don't know if I see him making a big move, but part of that is just that it seems too good to be true. I mean, if we head into Sunday and he's within a few strokes, and we're legitimately believing there's a chance he could win. I know it's unlikely, but if that were the case, guys, what level on, like, the Mount Rushmore of all-time sports stories would we be talking about?
It's on it. It's on it. Let's put it that way. It's on it because this is like Ben Hogan. In golf lore, Ben Hogan is, like, mythic. This would be Ben Hogan-ish. Who got into, you know, a truck rammed into his car, right, you know, on a highway. They thought he was going to die, and he won majors after that.
It would be, I don't even know how to qualify it or like what I could compare it to.
Well, just just and what it would mean in his popularity. It would be just I don't know what the number would be because there's a lot of competition on Sunday. You know, with baseball starting now, and I don't know, are people going to sit and watch the whole thing? Or are they just going to tune in when he tees off? I don't know what the number would be, but you're probably looking at a rivaling Duke, North Carolina, right? You're probably looking at, you know, 18 million.
More than that.
I don't know.
Oh, more than that.
But what did any number on a Sunday with Tiger in contention get?
Well, just remember one thing, Don. This is on CBS. It's not on TBS.
No,
so
I get that.
Destroy that number.
Right. So would it do over 20 million?
Yes, for sure. If Tiger's in contention, it would be well more than that. Now, how about this, Peter? If he wins on Sunday on the K-Rod cast, I wear his red Nike shirt.
I like it.
I like the pink, shocking pink T-shirt he wore today. That's a nice one, too.
Well, you know what? You could do what Rick's doing right now on The Point on ESPN2.
Which is what?
Why don't you go out, just in case Tiger wins, go out and get yourself a green jacket.
Okay, well, the 2019 Masters, when Tiger won, the final round had 10.81 million viewers.
That was it?
That's what it says here.
Wow. Then I stand
now, my guess is this would be up from that, even. A few million. This would be a few million up from that.
But God, but from the sports story would just be incredible.
You have to remember though the North Carolina Duke number. Not only is it one of the biggest rivalries in sports, but that tournament is one of the biggest betting opportunities in sports. So that the number is inflated, wouldn't you say, Don, by all the people who don't even give a damn. They just care about betting their Final Four.
Now, Greek makes a good point about that one that you mentioned. He said that was moved up because of inclement weather. That's why the number was lower.
Oh, that's right. It was a weird day. It ended at 2 o'clock. Yeah, I forgot about that.
No, it's going to – whatever the number is, the significance of it. I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but still, making the cut, he still has to do that unless he just has a disaster tomorrow. It, you know, you're not talking about an incredible lead. He's right there through one day. So we'll see how he feels tomorrow after walking the course and going through it. But he's going to be there on Saturday and Sunday, and if he's in contention, it's I don't even know what you would compare it to. It's just because there are people that hate Tiger that are going to watch and hope he fails. But at that point, did he fail? If he's in contention on Sunday, he's won. It's an amazing story if he's in contention on Sunday.
It's so true. He really did already win, even if he doesn't win.
And
if he
wins, it's hand out participation trophies, Don. Playing today, he won.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
It's pretty remarkable. The guy was, you know, almost had his leg amputated 13 months ago. This is remarkable. It's in a remarkable story. And I'm going to be the last guy that wants to sit here and anoint Tiger, but he's otherworldly. There's just, we haven't seen much like this in our life. You get hurt, you usually go away.
Can you imagine, too, what's Tiger playing like in 2022 at 46 years old if he had taken better care of himself physically and emotionally? You know, because he's really put himself through it over the years. Like, you wonder how good he could still be consistently if his body wasn't giving up on him.
Well, it's something interesting to watch, for sure.
It also really will make players like who walk into a manager's office and say, I need a day, you know, I'm a little sore. The guy almost had his leg amputated 14 months ago and is playing the Masters and playing well. It kind of takes away a lot of excuses. I'm a little sore today, Skip. Just saying.
Yeah, bad weekend to do that.
Bad weekend to say, I'm a little sore, Skip.
Yeah, you don't want to see anybody out with general soreness.
I hate General Soreness. He's way behind. I love General Sow. Hate General Soreness. Or General So, however you say it.
Is it So or Sow?
See, I just go Sesame Chicken. It's the same thing, but with sesame seeds.
See,
Don, I'm with you. I prefer
like
it.
Sesame Chicken. I really do. So I could actually order that, right, Don?
Sesame Chicken's so good.
You know what? I'm almost addicted. I might have to get off it.
Why do you always take away things you love? You don't eat Doritos anymore. What's
Which
wrong?
Which was a good call.
But why?
Doritos
love
are great.
It?
But
you only
I
go
can't.
Around like maybe at the most 100 times around the sun. Take the most of it.
But when it's something, when you have a problem, did you see those big bags I used to buy?
I'm sure
show it within the next 30 seconds. That's a person with a problem.
But
and when
why
you got a problem, that means
down.
You got to cut it out.
No. You see, it's like you rip the cancer out. Can't you just like get some therapy?
No, nobody says, well, listen, I got a real cocaine problem. If I can just get it to a point where it's just recreational, it'll be all right.
No, if they could do that, they would.
But you can't do it. That's the point. It can't be done.
Right. And Don can't do it. He knows
other things I can, but like sesame chicken's to the point where if you told me for the next month it's all I can have for dinner, I'd be okay.
Now you
That's how much I love it.
You ever get sesame seeds, though, from the sesame chicken stuck in your teeth?
Oh, sure.
What do you do with that?
Well, you get a toothpick. What do you mean, what do you do? Well, you call a doctor? You go to the dentist? You dial 911? Peter, I mean, what options do you have?
How about just lay down and give up?
You know what? I probably would. If it was a really pesky little seed, I'd give up.
You just say, no, what? This is too much.
Right. I'd go to sleep and say, hopefully when I wake up, it's somehow dislodged.
And the great thing about you usually get, you know, it's the takeout, right? So you usually get a plastic fork. So if you don't have a toothpick, just use the plastic fork.
Nah, then
there
you're
you
bleeding
go.
All over the fork. Come on.
What are you nuts? I didn't tell you to stab yourself with it. It's a plastic fork.
But it's bigger than a toothpick. I don't think you could get into a little crevice with a plastic fork or a spork.
No, a spork you couldn't do.
1-800-919-3776. What are your thoughts on tomorrow's Yankees lineup? You don't even know what it is yet. I don't know what it is.
Could it just be Torres out and DJ in? Could you do it that? Could that be a third option?
You know what? It could be. And Glaber was at the Knick game last night, but do you really want to do it now? Unless you're playing the percentages, so would you sit down the switch hitter Hicks against a righty Eovaldi, or would you sit down a right-hander Torres? The thing that hurts the least, though, in terms of like ego, is the kid, IKF.
Right, and that's why listening to Boone talk about the conversation, I don't think Kiner Falefa is that difficult a conversation, is it?
You know, that's a good point, too.
But Hicks
and also
coming back from injury.
Defense.
Hicks and Torres are tough conversations. So I think
or DJ. DJ, I think, is real tough, too.
But I don't – DJ deserves to play. He's been basically your MVP for, like, two of the four seasons, right? So,
yep.
All right, so you say Hicks out. I say Torres out.
Wow. And it said IKF. We know Donaldson's not out because he's leading off tomorrow.
What do you think, Peter? We need a third option. There are three options. Would you take the...
You're not sitting Rizzo. Left-handed bat against Evaldi. That would make sense.
Okay. So why don't you, Peter, why don't you take the first option, Michael, had, where Torres goes to short and Kiner Falefa's out.
But the reason I backed off that, you don't want to weaken. If you're saying Torres is not good enough to play shortstop all the time, you're going to start him there on opening day against the Red Sox? Don't know.
I don't know anything about this Kiner Falefa character.
Well, look it up. Well, we're going to go to a break. That gives you plenty of time.
He's got a good nickname.
I like acronyms.
No, I need to come
from
up
Hawaii.
Yeah. And
that makes
him
interesting right there.
His fourth cousin, Don, is Ralph Kiner. Did you know that?
That is not true.
I swear to God.
What?
On his mother's side, his fourth cousin is Ralph Kiner.
Aren't we all related in some way? Wow. Isn't it possible you can be my, like, sixth cousin? Once you get past three, I think
but
we're
this
all
is
related.
Documented, bud. He is Ralph Kiner's fourth cousin.
Who knows your fourth cousin?
Go do that genealogical thing.
Well, Ralph the swab?
Yeah, do the swab.
I mean, Ralph's no longer with us.
You don't have to. You have to swab Ralph's cheek.
Did I tell you my brother did it?
And?
Not from Italy.
Nothing.
So you're not either.
Yeah, he's got no Italian in him whatsoever.
So that means you don't either.
No, well, unless. And we clearly are brothers, so nothing happened there. But it was right on the border. Like, it's causing a lot of problems on my dad's side because they all believe they're from Italy, and according to that, we're from, what's the border, Switzerland.
Wow, that's
interesting. That would explain the blue eyes.
So you're not Italian at all, but you're stuck with Don Marco.
He's still Italian. You're still Italian. It just means that your family wasn't there for very long. It's not where their roots are.
Well, it was right at the border, so it's...
You never know what goes on.
It's like
on
being
at the
born
border.
In Weehawken and saying you're from New York, right?
No, there's a big river that they drain when they built the tunnel, but there's a big river there. let's take a brief timeout. 1-800-919-3776. We talk with you. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Always be careful, everybody, because I try to teach you things every single day. So always be careful thinking that you know what goes on behind closed doors in a family situation. So everybody was lamenting that the Braves let Freddie Freeman go to the Dodgers. And Ronald Acuna Jr. said today, I'm not sad about it at all. We had a conflict. So you never know. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but he certainly made it public. He said, I don't miss him. You just never know what goes on behind closed doors.
But God, what a tough position. Well, not really that difficult because he was a free agent. But, you know, management with Atlanta's like... We got a superstar we probably want to bring back, and there's too many conflicts on the team, and we got to let him go. Like, we got to make a choice. Because everybody wondered, like, why are the Braves letting him go? They just won a World Series. It's not like they're strapped for cash. Maybe that was it. Hey, we got a room here that doesn't like this guy. He's a free agent. Let him go. Could it be that?
They did make him an offer. But they just wouldn't go that extra yard for him. You know, this was their line in the sand, yeah. And they wouldn't cross it. And you would figure, I know what you're saying, you cross it for that guy, right? And, I mean, Anthopoulos, their GM, was crying when he said that Freddie Freeman's not here anymore. So either he's an incredible actor, which I don't think he is, or he really felt pain letting him go.
Yeah, you're probably right, because I think in baseball it's less important than it is in the other sports. So you have a couple of guys who hate each other, you know, so what? You know, I don't think it's going to affect them playing each other. It's not like a quarterback having a bad relationship with his offensive line or, you know, a basketball team that needs that continuity. It's not ideal, but not enough to have a guy like that walk away if you want to keep him.
So Acuna was asked, what are you going to miss about Freddie Freeman? He said, me, nothing.
Wow. I love that.
He said, we were close in that we shared the same stadium, but we had a lot of, how do you say, lots of clashes.
You know what? I love people like that. I know it's not right to name names, but, you know, so what? You don't like somebody? Like, I think you guys are going to respect this book choice. I'm reading Eric Dickerson's autobiography.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
He is naming names. If he doesn't like somebody, he's not being like, I had an offensive lineman on my team that just didn't care about playing football. He'll mention the player. I love that. Everybody he loves, he loves. Everybody he hates, he mentions them. And boy, he hated a lot of people.
So, Cabrian Hayes, who is Charlie Hayes' son, who caught the last out of the 96 series for the Yankees, he just signed the largest contract in Pirates history today. 7 years, $80 million.
I thought it was eight. It wasn't
eight years. Eight. Yeah. I got it wrong. Dyslexia. 8 years, $70 million. So the Pirates are playing right now, and he injured his wrist and had to leave the game.
Oh, no.
No.
Poor Pirates.
The same day he signed the largest contract in Pirates history.
Now,
someone once said, and I think it really holds true here, it's not what you want.
God, they've had some good teams, but they haven't won since 79. Is it the curse of Willie Stargell? Family Pirates?
Let me give you some baseball scores on opening day. I know you're looking for this. Yeah. Brewers and the Cubs, much to the delight of Don, the Cubs have got back in this game. It's 3-3, bottom of the seventh inning. You've got Cleveland and KC at KC. Bad weather in KC, but they're playing the game. Nothing-nothing, top of the fourth. And it's the top of the second inning, and St. Louis won, Pirates nothing in the game that Cabrian Hayes got hurt. And don't forget, everybody, I know you won't, Mets and the Nationals tonight. It's on ESPN Plus. It's also on SNY. Now, I do want to give you a little bit of a programming note. We've got the Rangers and the Penguins in a big game. Okay. You have to have ESPN Plus. It's an ESPN Plus exclusive.
That's right. Okay. Got the fire to watch warmed up.
Now, if you want to listen to it, you can listen to it right here. 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock puck drop on 98.7 ESPN. But I do want to give some love to our partners at MSG. They're going to have a full pregame for the Rangers-Penguins, Don, and they're going to have a full postgame. So you can only watch the game on ESPN+. Plus. But if you want to get some Ranger insight before and after, so you can still go to MSG.
That's smart, because they'll do that for the playoff games, too. This is a big game. So they want to have the pre and post involved. Bill
now,
Pito will be running points, Steven Valiquette.
If the season ended now, right?
Yes.
So they would meet the Penguins in the first round.
Yes.
If they overtake first place, who would they meet?
They would meet right now either Boston or Washington.
All right, so they're 2 points back of first place and 4 points ahead of second?
Yes.
Of third.
Of third.
What's a better matchup for them, Donald?
Well, I think I would rather face Boston or Washington.
Okay.
Than Pittsburgh, although I think they can beat Pittsburgh, have two out of three, but I just think that Boston and Washington are better matchups for them. Now, they're 2 points back at Carolina. Carolina's got a game in hand, but the Rangers play Carolina twice, both times at the Garden. So they got a chance. And then you win the division. Yeah, then that's what you want. That would be great to be able to do that. So, because then you would have, if you won the division, then maybe it's Boston that move up. So you just it would be a really good thing to do, because then it would give Carolina a tougher matchup in the first round. Then you get Carolina maybe playing Pittsburgh, which is the way it would work out. And then maybe you get Pittsburgh to knock Carolina out, because I think Carolina is really, really good.
Now, this is for Yankee Twitter to go nuts on.
All right.
Clint Frazier pinch hitting in his Cubs debut, pinch hit a double. So, fire up, hit the Twitter button. We'll be back. We'll talk about Aaron Judge's contract. I've gotten conflicting reports from people I respect, so I will
really?
Just lay it out. Yeah, I'll lay it out there on the line, what I've heard. And I don't know if it's going to get done or not. If it's going to get done, it's going to get done tomorrow before the game, I would think. We'll break it down. Buster Olney will also ring in with what he thinks is going on. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Aaron Boone, do you have your lineup yet?
I do.
Would you give it to us?
No. I'll give it to you tomorrow morning, so, but I do know what it is, and I've talked to a couple people that, you know, obviously, you know, someone significant will be out of the lineup, so, yeah, so we'll release that tomorrow morning.
I'm just curious, that conversation that you had with that said player, right? Did he try to politic you? Did he go, oh, come on?
Nope.
He said, I get it.
You get it. You know, we had this conversation essentially, like I said, 10 days ago. We had them all there, and it could have been some or any of them. And so I think, in a way, probably prepared for that conversation. I'm sure there's certainly some disappointment, but we understand that the mission that we're on and what our goal is of being a championship team, and this will not derail that group or us.
The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so we talked to Aaron Boone, as we will every Thursday, so make that appointment viewing at 4 o'clock. Now, I just told you the Ronald Acuna Jr. story where he kind of took shots at Freddie Freeman.
Kind of.
Now, he took these shots speaking in Spanish to a Dominican Republic-based sports reporter. His name is Yanin Pujols. This was late Wednesday night on Instagram Live. So he tweeted out, like early this morning, I never said those things. But there are people that were on the live stream and said he absolutely did say these things.
Oh, come on.
So he's not Eric Dickerson, Don. But here's the amazing thing. I really believe these players do not understand the reach of the smallest thing that they're doing. Everything is worldwide now. You can't just do a little nut one-off on something that you think is insignificant and the world's not going to know about it. The world will know about it. And then to deny it when it's taped and people are on the live stream.
Yeah, that's so weak. Own it.
You already did it.
It's out there.
You're not making up for it, so.
It's probably not a very popular take because most people in that clubhouse love the guy. Freeman, I'm talking about. Love them.
I hope it closes a rift that really just brings the entire team down. Is that wrong?
There you go.
Well, that's because you're a Met fan, not that you're anti-Acuna.
No, but, you know, what do you want me to do? Root for the guy?
No.
We're in a Brave uniform.
You always do what you do. So we're still waiting on whether or not Aaron Judge is going to go into the season with a one-year contract or a lifetime, essentially, contract with the New York Yankees. Here's what Buster Olney said on Greeny today.
Early yesterday was the last time that, you know, talked to someone who had knowledge of what was going on. And what I got back was that at that time, it didn't seem optimistic. Now, you guys know how these things can play out. They can change in a heartbeat. You know, the player's perspective can change. The team can suddenly step up and increase their offer. I've wondered all along, is this, these conversations have taken place. You know, the fact that the Mets are spending so much money, Steve Cohen is cost be damned. You know, we're going to spend whatever it takes. How much pressure does that put on Hal Steinbrenner? You know, does that mean in a crucial moment, if they feel like they're within striking distance of a deal, does that make Hal Steinbrenner step up and say, yes, give him that extra, you know, $15, $20 million that puts it over the top?
Now, Anthony Rizzo, a veteran on the Yankees, and last year after he got traded to the Yankees, he and Judge seemed like they got pretty close. Well, Rizzo spoke to the media today at the stadium, a workout day, and, you know, it seems like Aaron Judge has somebody in his ear. Listen to Rizzo.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to him a little bit about it, and at the end of the day, it's what's going to make him and Sam happy. And what his value is and what his worth is extremely high in this game. He's a legitimate MVP candidate every single year, and he knows that. And he's really, really good at this game. And he's really good at how he handles everything. I've admired him from afar for years. I've heard nothing but good things about him. And then I come over last year and meet him, and it's the total package. And, you know, what he brings to this organization from my time being here is something I haven't seen before. But when it comes to the business side of it, there's no secret to, you know, you see Freddie Freeman isn't on the Braves anymore. There's no loyalty in this game. And when you separate that on the business side and you take your heart out of it, that's the tough part.
The Yankees probably aren't thrilled that that's the information flow into Aaron's ear.
Right.
Not that he's going to lean on Anthony Rizzo. But, I mean, when a guy, you know, because Anthony Rizzo feels he probably got stiffed by the Cubs. And then he looks at Freeman and he feels that Freeman got stiffed by the Braves. And I do believe there's loyalty. I do. If Aaron Judge had been acquired by the Yankees and was not a homegrown Yankee and did all the same things he's done, I think that they would not offer him as much money as they will eventually offer him. I believe that there is loyalty to a point. I don't think they're going to go past what they feel is the right thing. But I think there is loyalty, Don. I think that's not the right thing to tell him. I believe there is loyalty.
Right, but I think what Rizzo's probably telling him is, listen, what kind of year do you think you're going to have? If you think you can be an MVP this year, why wouldn't you test free agency? Right? Because these athletes are always thinking, nothing's going to happen to me. I just came off, he finished third in the MVP last year.
Fourth.
You know, he's a great player, still, you know, young. Go out there, have a monster year, and then the world's your oyster, right? You're going to get whatever you want in free agency, and that includes the Yankees. I'm sure Rizzo's probably telling, listen, the New York Yankees, the richest organization in North American sports, if they want you, they'll give it to you. So the only risk is if Judge has an injury-plagued year, and it's like, oh, boy, he's going to be 31 years old. Do I want to give 7 years to a guy, you know, coming off an injury? But if you believe in yourself and you think you're going to rake, and I'm sure Rizzo's probably telling that. It's like, why wouldn't you test free agency? Because he'll get what he wants, right? There'll be some team out there that might even give him eight. Who knows?
And, yeah, I mean, when Aaron Judge is healthy, he's right. One of the best players in baseball. And the 2 years that he's been totally healthy, he finished second in the MVP voting. Some say he should have won because the guy who won cheated, Jose Altuve. And then last year he finished fourth. He's a tremendous player. And the only question is whether or not he stays healthy. But in the 2 years he's been healthy, he shows you how great he is.
And I'm sure there's ball players, especially veterans, and again, I'm coming off the Eric Dickerson book, and he just outlines about loyalty. And loyalty only goes so far. You fall in love with these teams, but you want the love from the organization that drafted you, that you have won with, you played well with. And he's probably thinking, listen, if you want me to be your next captain, you'll give me what I want. And the Yankees aren't willing to do that. So his leverage is to go out there, have a monster season, and become a free agent. And what are the Yankees going to root for him to have a bad year so he doesn't go to free agency? No, they're going to want him to have a great year because they want to win.
It's the same thing with the Mets and DeGrom. They wanted him to have a great year, so he would opt out.
So Rizzo's probably telling him stories. Heck, I was in Chicago. I won a championship with them. But you know what? They did what they had to do. The Yankees are going to do what they have to do. But at the end of the day, you're going to be able to get what you're looking for. The only thing you should be loyal to is yourself. I'm sure veterans are telling him that. But I'm sure in his inner voice probably saying, I want to be a Yankee. I want to be here for the rest of my career. Well, then that means you might have to give a discount. Because I'm not sure the Yankees are just going to cave here unless they have to. And right now they don't have to. They probably don't want him to test free agency, but they don't have to give him a contract extension.
Here's the big question. Let's say Aaron feels, and he has the right to feel this way, let's say Aaron feels, I want to get paid what Mike Trout and Mookie Betts make. And the Yankees go, well, we don't put you at that level. Then what do you do? I mean, you just pay him anything he wants? And again, I think he's a great player. And I think that you move heaven and earth to sign him. But at what right. point do you stop? Now, I told you in the tease that I had two unbelievably conflicting messages sent to me by two people really embedded in baseball. One guy last night texted me late at night and said, I heard the Yankees have made such a big money offer that if Aaron turns it down, it's going to be on him. I said, so I went to bed thinking, well, I don't think he'll turn it down. I'll probably take it. I mean, if this guy who I respect has that sort of information, well, I assume it's going to get done. Now, right before the show today, I got a text from another person deeply embedded in baseball, knows everything going on, and he goes, I cannot believe how short the offer the Yankees gave was. I said, I heard the complete opposite last night. He goes, well, that's what I'm hearing. He said, they're still talking, but I heard the last offer they gave was incredibly short of what Judge is looking for.
Now,
so I don't know who to believe because I respect the heck out of both of these people.
Now, could both be right?
Maybe it was a great offer and it's short of what Aaron wants. Yeah, I guess it could. Yeah.
No, I mean both the information could be right, where the money is just too much to turn down, but maybe the term comes up short. Like, what if it's a monster amount of money, but they're not willing to go past 6 years?
Right.
So can the person saying they're short saying, this guy, they're not giving his seventh year. They're coming up short. They're only willing to give him six. They're not even willing to give the club option for a seventh. And the other side saying those but the money per year is going to be too much for him to turn down. Could they both be right?
I think the only way they could both be right is that it's an extraordinary offer, but Judge wants more. Where Judge's camp thinks it's just short. I don't know if it's the number. I don't know if it's the number of years. I'm not sure. But my initial reaction in getting both of those, these people who are really dialed in are completely getting opposite information. I think I give the Yankees credit. Nobody knows what's going on. I mean, John Morosi of the MLB Network saying they're still negotiating. Nobody really knows what's going on. I predict that it gets done tomorrow in a big press conference, and he gets introduced to the crowd as he just signed a blank year contract and it will be here forever. You know, and the crowd goes nuts. That's how I think it's going to go. I'd be surprised if they don't sign him, but do I think it's an impossibility? No, I don't think it's an impossibility.
I think you're right that we absolutely know nothing about what's going to happen. But I will say, I personally think the Yankees have the advantage in this negotiation in the sense that I understand obviously why Judge would want a seventh year. But don't you guys think that two things? Number one, given his history, which is, while it's certainly been better, and last year he was really healthy, he knows his body better than everyone and probably knows over the course of time what his body is going to be and what issues he may encounter. But beyond that, just the fact that in New York, if he gets named the captain and is the guy for the next 6 years with the New York Yankees, the money that will be available to him is much more money than the seventh year that he would get. Mm. If it's the difference between staying or going. If it's the difference between him being here or Anaheim or wherever it would be. You guys don't think that the money that he'd get otherwise would be bigger just being here?
Because what are you talking about per year, Michael?
I think it's got to be over 30 a year.
I mean, is he going to be able to make over $30 million?
I'm thinking long
term. The length of the contract?
No, I'm going beyond that. I'm going what his money looks like being a career Yankee for the rest of his life. You know what I mean? Like, this doesn't just end when his contract ends. If they win a World Series while he's here, if he's named the captain, and he is what he has been so far, which is a phenomenal player both ways, he's a giant, he's well-liked, he's kind, all of those things, he keeps it up and is a forever Yankee.
I don't know.
I think that money lasts forever.
Has Derek Jeter made that kind of money?
Yeah, you know, Derek Jeter's made generational wealth.
No, enough to buy a team.
No, he didn't. I mean, he only put in $5 million. I mean, but it's not, you know, like.
No, but that was an exaggeration.
What I'm saying, like.
$150 million of the Timberwolves. That's real involvement. Derek was involved in a different way.
But Derek has gotten rich in the years.
Yes.
He's continued to make money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, a sticking point that you keep reading about, you know, Aaron could tell the Yankees, well, Mookie Betts' contract is through his age 40 season. And Mike Trout's, it was 39th, year 39. But they were never injured before this. So, I mean, that's right. What both sides could be parrying back and forth, well, and those could be sticking points. So, Aaron, you can ask for whatever you want. And listen, if he becomes a free agent coming off a great year, then he's going to be able to name his price in years. And the thing that has to scare the Yankees, you're bidding against 29 other teams, including a guy who would love to make your organization look bad across the river, who doesn't seem like he has a limit to what he wants to spend.
See, that's the thing. That's probably what Arizzo's telling him. Like, listen, what do you want? And Aaron Pryor's like, oh, I'd love to get – listen, in a perfect world, I'd love to get an 8-year deal. Well, we got an owner in this same city that might just give you whatever you want. All you have to do is just have a good season, a great season, which you normally would if you stay healthy. And if you hit free agency, you'll get exactly what you want. And that's awful tempting for a player with confidence that believes he can go out and accomplish what he wants, knowing that there are teams that would give him that. What if he wants 8 years, Michael? What if he just, you know, he saw what Hayes just signed for him in a different circumstance, but was like, hey, I want to get an 8-year. I don't want to be punished because I'm 30. I've accomplished a lot here in my major league career. And if I think I can get that in free agency, I'm only a year away. Does he want to have an MVP season and at the end of the year say, boy, look at the money I cost myself. If I had just waited.
Now, but I'm sorry to be that guy because I love Judge. And I think the fact that he played 148 games last year is incredibly important. But also, let's look at the numbers realistically. I mean, if Don, I hear what you're saying. But is it wise to bet on his body in that way?
Well,
he had the 148 last year, but he missed half the shortened season the year before that, and he missed a third of the season the year before that.
Listen, I've led that parade. You're absolutely right. That's logic. But look at DeGrom, who's saying he's going to opt out. Like, that's the confidence he has. He's had injuries the last couple of years. He's hurt now. And his attitude is, I'm going to opt out, because he believes that once he gets back on that mound, he's going to be lights out. Like that, so if Judge is thinking like that, like, hey, I wasn't hurt last year, you know,
but Judge's
those injuries were fluky things. I'll be careful, you know. I take care of my body, and I'm sure he's being told, if you go out there and have a monster year, you're gonna get anything you want, because there's 7 miles away, there's an owner that's gonna give you exactly what you want.
But Michael, wouldn't you say that Judge's history with injury is much more legitimate to point to than DeGrom? I'm not saying DeGrom over the last year, there's not a lot of question marks. But prior to that, that story has kind of been hyped up since his most recent injury. The Judge thing's very real up to last year.
I think DeGrom is much more troubling than Judge, because Judge's injury,
because you don't know what it is.
Right, you don't know what it is, and it involves the arm. Judge has had injuries where he made a dive in the outfield and broke his rib and then got his hand broken by a pitch. So I don't look at those as injuries that – you know, soft tissue injuries. I think DeGrom's are much more concerning. Oh,
can you imagine?
Much more concerning.
Now, let's put it from the Yankees' perspective, okay? Let's say Judge has an MVP season, but the Yankees come up short again, losing the wild card. Could they afford the PR hit of losing him in free agency?
That's why he might think he's got the upper hand.
Yeah.
And he's squeezing as much as he could squeeze.
The only negative for Judge, guys, is if he gets hurt.
And
because
Judge,
if he's healthy, he's going to have a monster year.
A really big time. He doesn't have a Boris. He doesn't have that guy. So his agent is trying to make a name for himself, too. His agent has been with him since, you know, he got out of college at Fresno. So this is a big moment for the agent, too. And every other agent watches, and every other player watches. So they're going to look at the deal that Judge got, and then they might sign Judge's agent, too. Well, I want to be represented by this guy. If he goes under market, you know, there's a lot of things at play here that the Yankees have to deal with. It's ego. It's projecting out how good is this guy going to be at what age. It's a tough call, but I think they know, as Don said, fans aren't going to be rational. If you end up losing Aaron Judge as a free agent at the end of the year, you're going to look bad.
And let's just say you're committed to give Judge what he wants. Like, at the end of the day, you're not letting this guy walk. But you're going through the negotiations like you should, hoping that he caves and you get what you want. If the Yankees are willing to give him whatever he wants, then wouldn't it behoove the Yankees, all right, let him play. Because maybe he doesn't have that great of a year. Maybe he does get hurt again and you'll get him at less money. And is that might be worth it than to give all that he wants right now. Go ahead, test free agency. And we'll give you what you want. But right now, you know, we're not willing to do that because we want to see what this is going to be like. Let's see you go out there and have that year. And it behooves them for him to have an MVP year because that means the Yankees are great and they might have a chance to win a title. Because if they win a title, Michael, they can't let him walk then.
Well, they let Matsui walk after a title. He won the MVP.
You know, this but is somebody special.
If you play that game, though, you're costing yourself $100 million if you're the Yankees. So you have to do that dance between how much is too much to give him now, and then what's it going to cost if he has an MVP-type season at the end of the year. Now, there's one other thing that you have to factor in, which good organizations do. Okay, if we lose Judge, what's on the horizon? And a year after Judge would be a free agent, so one more year after this one, Juan Soto's a free agent at the age of 25. A bat that plays better at Yankee Stadium because it's left-handed. So, but that's going to be $50 million a year. I mean, everybody assumes he's going to be the first $50 million a year player, and he's represented by Scott Boras. So there's not going to be any – you're not going to get any discount on Juan Soto.
But you're getting him at much younger. I mean, that's the other problem, too, is that you're talking about, you know, a guy that's going to be 31 years old when this contract kicks in.
You got the thing is, you got to realize how special this guy is to the Yankees and to their fans and the way he conducts himself. And I think that's really, really, really important. And the Yankees know it as well. So that's why I think that when it's all said and done, there's going to be nothing left to say or do other than have a press conference tomorrow. I can't see it ending any other way. I will be really surprised if he's not signed by the game tomorrow.
That's what I thought the plan was all along.
Yeah, we both thought that. So yeah. let's see if it
We'll have quite the show after the game. I mean, the game might be an afterthought, Michael, tomorrow if there's no announcement.
I will talk to you about it in just a moment. 1-800-919-3776. We have Greg Maddux at 5:45. That'll be fun, talking to one of the greatest pitchers who ever lived. And then we have ENN at 6. Big show, opening day. Mets play tonight against the Nationals. 7 o'clock start on SNY. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on YES and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
The Ronald Acuna Jr. story continues to get a little bit sexier and sexier. So he's meeting with the media in Atlanta, and he was asked, is there anything you'd like to clear up? I think the reporters exaggerated. I didn't say anything bad about Freeman. I talked about what happened at 18 when I came up as a rookie. The rest was blown out of proportion. The question, do you feel like you and Freddie had some conflict during your rookie year? I'd say that we didn't because of what happened, but that's in the past. Instead of celebrating that we're at the opening day and defending the World Series, we're talking about this stupidity. What do you think was blown out of proportion? What I talked about was what happened in 2018. I didn't say the rest of it that's out there. Question, saying you didn't miss him, do you wish you had said something different? I don't regret it. He signed with another team. The report asked me what I would miss about him. What should I miss about someone who's on another team? What was your relationship like about 2018? You didn't say he was overbearing. He never controlled me. He has a life and I have a life. Do you regret doing this interview on the night before opening day and brought this kind of attention? I don't regret anything. I only said a few things that were made a spectacle of because Ronald Acuna Jr. was saying them. Do you feel you need to say anything to Freddie? I didn't say anything bad about him. I didn't disrespect him. I will repeat myself. I talked about what happened in 2018. That was in the past. It was a normal interview. It was exaggerated by the media.
Oh, here we go.
How do you exaggerate absolute quotes that are there? How do you exaggerate them?
It's so annoying.
He didn't come out and say he loved them, so there's something there.
Yeah, but I hate these athletes that will not, like, it's always the media, exaggerate about, like, obviously they can go back. I don't speak Spanish, but I'm sure there's enough people that can translate exactly what was said. Wasn't a newspaper. It was said. So, you know, so and what does that do to the people that interviewed him? Like, they're a bunch of liars?
It's amazing. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Pat in Springfield. Patty.
Hey, gentlemen. How we doing?
Great.
So,
you?
Listen. I'm great. By the way, it took you being sick, and I'm glad you're here, but it took you being sick to realize that you're the child in the room and the two of them together are the adults.
It
was staggering to me.
Yes.
But listen, I'm sorry. Back in the early 80s, the Mets drew under 800,000. You paid $5 for a ticket. You tipped the usher. You sit any way you want. But back then, there was always like a sketchy guy who wore a ratty starter jacket. It didn't cover his belly. He had a taped-up giveaway seat cushion, and he would sit there and he would riff on the farm system, and he'd complain about Joe McDonald and the Deroulets, but he knew everything. But it was just a classic Met degenerate. And the only difference between that guy and Steve Cohen is $8
billion. $12
billion. And this guy now, $12 billion. And this guy now, there's a Met degenerate running the place. This is the guy running the place. And there is nothing. He's sitting there picking his teeth, waiting for the Yankees just to trip up. And he's primed to do a stupid Anaheim contract. Primed to just do something, front load $60 million a year. I don't care. It looks great. This is where I am, and this is just what I think. I think there's a madman on the loose, but it's just going to be back page heaven to watch.
Well, I think that's got to be a concern. I think, Pat, when the decision is made how much to offer him and the possibility of him becoming a free agent, once he becomes a free agent, then you unleash every potential one bad contract owner on him. Yankees have to realize that.
But, you know, he went a little over the top with the degenerate Met fan stuff. But think about it if you're Steve Cohen, okay? This is chump change to you overall. I mean, it's a lot of money for us, and it's certainly a lot of money for a ball player. But for him, it's chump change for the deals he wheels and deals on a daily basis. But if he gives Judge the outrageous 8-year contract, $40 million a year, again, it's chump change to him, and it makes the competition of the Yankees look bad. You talk about trying to win back the city. Those are the types of moves that can do it. If the Yankees come off a disappointing season, the Mets are competing for a championship, they steal Aaron Judge away, do you think there's going to be one Met fan out there who's going to be like, well, that's a lot of money to give Judge. That's a lot of years to give Judge. And if Judge ends up breaking down, okay, he'll spend the money someplace else. So if he becomes George Steinbrenner, Michael, because that was what George was. He wanted to win. He also wanted to make the Mets look bad. He loved doing that because he wanted to steal the back pages. Imagine if that were to happen, the pressure the Yankees would be under to avoid that from taking place.
Let's go to Bob in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Bob.
Hi, Mike. Hi, guys.
Hello.
I want to make a couple of points, Michael. Mm-hmm. First, yesterday I couldn't get in. Lifelong Yankee fan since I was 2 years old. I'm 74 years old now.
Okay.
I've been through the good times and the bad times. And the one thing Aaron Judge has to realize, if he does not get a contract or he holds out, Joe DiMaggio held out, and the Yankee fans who loved him gave him a rough time that first part of his season. But the big thing is, if Aaron does leave, and let's say he does leave and he goes to the Mets and he gets this giant contract, and first year he's up there, bang, it happens, he's out for 6 weeks. Second year of this contract, we're getting into June and July, bang, he's out for 8 weeks. And those things could happen to a ball player, especially a guy like Aaron Judge, who's a big man. He's carrying a lot on his frame. He plays hard. He's one of the hardest playing players, and I really like him, and I'd like him to stay. I could understand, you know, he's worried about himself and his next how many more years. My biggest problem with most of these ball players, how much money is enough?
I don't think that's fair. How much money is enough for owners? I mean, how much money is enough? The most money I could get.
Right.
I mean, he's not worried about, like, paying the grocery bill at ShopRite. This is how athletes take score. And also, he's not holding out everybody. You know, Joe DiMaggio held out, and they didn't have any recourse other than the holdout. Aaron Judge says, I'll play this year, and I'll play the best I can. I want to be a Yankee. He's not threatening anybody, so don't think like that. And anytime you sign a guy to a long-term deal, the imminent danger of injury is there. I mean, you don't think they worry about that with Gerrit Cole all the time, signing a pitcher to a 9-year deal? But you do it. You do what you have to do.
But the interesting thing is, the reason that teams are afraid to give the long-term deal is because he could break down. That's the exact reason Judge wants the long-term deal.
Right.
He wants the security if, God forbid, something happens to him, that he's still going to be able to cash in. So I understand him trying to get – listen, this is the last contract he's probably ever going to be able to make big money. This is probably it. If he gets the – even if he gets the 7-year deal, that's it. Because at 37, 38 years old, he might still stay in Major League Baseball. He's not going to make anywhere near this. This is his one shot. How can you begrudge him of that?
I don't like – usually it's older fans that do that. And the fan base is different than it was with DiMaggio. The players were the enemy. when they stood up against the owners. I don't think that's the way it is anymore. And to say how much is too much, does anybody look at the bottom line book of the Dodgers and go, wow, they made $250 million in profit net last year. How much is too much? Nobody ever says that about owners.
Right.
So why can't the player get as much as he wants, or at least try? You can ask for whatever you want.
Did you see Elon Musk is worth $100 billion more than who came in second in the Fortune 500? Do you think now he's just going to rest on his laurels? No, he wants to make more.
Right. Stop making Teslas. How much is too much? Hey, stop delivering packages to Amazon. How much is too much? That's a silly take. Warren Buffett, don't trade any stocks anymore. How much is too much?
Well, I think you're losing the argument a little bit there, because that's not the situation the ball players are in.
Why should they limit
themselves? No, I hear you. They shouldn't. But it's different. Like a top five billionaire in the country, like we just mentioned, Bezos or Musk.
Right.
There's a legitimate argument to be made about at what point does it just say it's nothing anymore. It's not even a thing. It's not even real money anymore. So whereas with ball players, Aaron Judge, we think of him as being well-to-do. He has not made huge money yet for a guy who's in the percentage of ball players that he's in.
He's made $17 million in his big league career. Now, no one's going to throw a telethon for him, but the amount of money he's generated.
That's 17 gross?
Yeah.
So he's made about seven. Eight. Let's be realistic. So he's down to $8 million. I don't know if you know this, but Aaron Judge can't take the bus to Yankee Stadium every day. He's not sitting in coach seats. There's a certain lifestyle he has to live that costs him a lot of money. He's probably put away legitimately a few million dollars. That's it. The rest he's probably been living off of. So he needs to cash in for his family. Like, he's trying to, you know, get generational wealth, which an athlete of his level has earned. So why would anyone begrudge him doing
that? Well, that's what
it's
we're saying.
It's not the same
here.
I'm just saying it's not the same as someone who's already sitting on $200 billion.
No, but the difference is, you're right, is that the billionaire can make billions until he dies. A ball player can only make so much money. I mean, this is it. After this contract is up, he might be able to make a few million here or there after the age of 38, but then he's got half his life to live where he'll never be able to make this kind of money. So make it while you can. Especially because of the injuries, how it all could be taken away in one swoop. And in baseball, unlike football, all of it's going to be guaranteed. So, yeah, try to get what you can.
Let's take a brief timeout. We have Greg Maddux coming up next, and ENN follows that. Big show, K-Show, opening day show, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.